Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to an early edition of PhillyFanatics.com's Philly Sports Talk. I'm Eric Fisher. With me, Josh Landsberg and Gordon Glantz. We have a jam-packed show today. And let's get right to it with news that first broke on Friday and got worse the last 2 days. And that is the injury to Ben Simmons, the number one overall pick in the NBA draft, has broken the fifth metatarsal on his foot during a scrimmage on Friday, the last day of training camp. Josh, we'll start with you. What is the impact of this injury on the Sixers?
Well, Eric, I think it has a huge impact. I kind of joked with you, we were talking before the show, that one good thing that might come out of it is they might get another number one pick in the draft, next year's draft. But no, in all seriousness, I think it could be, looking on the positive side, it could be a positive thing because I think they really need to trade either Joel Embiid, Okafor, for Nerlens Noel. They can't have three centers on the same team. It didn't work with two centers last year with Noel and Okafor, and they've been trying to trade both Okafor and Noel, and they just haven't been getting enough in return. They got, enough in return from the Celtics. I thought they fleeced the Celtics, but apparently the Celtics didn't want to do the deal because they really liked the guard out of Providence, the point guard. But I think that if I had a guess, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I would say Embiid stays on the team, but they probably trade either Okafor or Noel. And what they try to do, because they don't want the season to be a total loss, they want to improve. They want their fans to come to games. They're going to try to get a point guard or a shooting guard or some kind of forward. I think they're going to try to get a point guard because Ben Simmons was probably going to play kind of a point forward for them, and that's a position they don't have. They, made a mistake not bringing back Ish Smith. He's not, a great starting point guard, but he's a good backup, and he could have filled the starting role while Simmons was hurt. So I think that they're going to try to make a trade and bring in a point guard, Eric.
Thanks, Josh. They do have, Sergio Rodriguez and Jared Bayless, although I don't think either of those are long-term. They're, stopgap guys, I think. I don't think they're long-term solutions.
Bayless is more of a shooting guard also, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a shoot first point guard, I guess you'd call it. Noel certainly your too many centers issue certainly came up already in training camp, or actually right before it started, with Noel saying he didn't see how it was going to work and it didn't make sense. I don't think they're trading Embiid, but I think your Okafor and Noel continue to be available. Gordon, how about you? How does Simmons? Injury, and by the way, the Sixers, we should be clear, have not said specifically how long he's going to be out or an estimate, but there are reports that he's going to have surgery, which seems to be a minimum of 3 months. And depending on the severity of it, like Kevin Durant, could be almost a whole year. Gordon, what are your thoughts on the impact of this?
Yeah, the impact to me really depends a lot on how long he's out. I think it's this breaking news, pardon the pun, really becomes, bad news if he really misses the whole season. It's not the end of the world. They weren't going to win the championship anyway. But I think, if he misses the whole season, that impedes his development a little bit. And that's still what it's more about. It's still about these young guys getting more playing time than they would maybe in another situation. And seeing if they can handle it and be improving. And so him, not being able to be on the floor, I think isn't a good thing. How the team's going to gel for the future, it just seems like they can't, quote unquote, I hit pardon the pun again, I can't catch a break, And you have to worry, too, with an injury like that. You saw what happened with Embiid. It's just going to become a continual problem with him. Does he have the kind of feet that, can't withstand the pressure of, a lot of guys can't. Their knees, their feet, their ankles, whatever, they just have problems their whole career. So, and he's such a young guy. So it doesn't bode well. There really is no Josh did a good job trying to find a silver lining, but I can't really find a silver lining. If anything, it makes them a little more hesitant to make a trade because, they were trying to kind of figure out where he fits and where the other guys fit and then which one's the spare part. And now they really, they have to kind of go back to the drawing board. And I guess the only silver lining I can see is it probably gives more playing time and more opportunity to see what Dario Saric can do. He probably moves up a notch in the pecking order. And maybe, you know, we'll look back. I'm just trying to really grab at things here that, you know, if he ends up being a real solid player, that it was a blessing that he, in disguise, that he got to play more this season than maybe he would have, his splitting time, you know. So that's it is again, you know, a bad quote unquote break. I mean, there's no positive to it. If anything, teams could, you know, if the Sixers, you know, figure, well, we're going to just trade some guys off and point towards next year, and, you know, it's going to hold teams back from really offering the Sixers fair return for one of the big men. So, and I've said all along, we don't know about Embiid. We don't know if Embiid's healthy. We don't know if Embiid's going to be overly effective. We don't know anything about him, from a guy who hasn't played for 2 years, who was somewhat of a raw project to begin with, you know, to get rid of one or both of the other guys just for the sake of doing it. I'm not in such a hurry to do that before the trade. You got to get rid of at least one by the trading deadline, but I don't know if I'd be in a mad rush to do it before then anyway. So
okay,
that's kind of my
Gordon.
Take on it. There really is no positive spin that I could give it.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I've heard, like, you know, I've read a couple pieces this weekend, obviously, and, you know, one or two have suggested it might be a good thing for him to sit out a year, and, you know, I don't get it. We do have a caller on the line. Caller, if you have a Sixers comment or question, you can chime in, or if you want to hang in there until it's time to get to a topic you want to talk about, go ahead. Do you have a Sixers comment? Okay. I guess my thought, I just want to turn my thoughts in on there. You know, is it, you talk, it's all about development this year, and I agree with you. I mean, we want to see them win more games, obviously. But, you know, this they were supposed to be building this team around Ben Simmons, you know, around his style, I should say, where, you know, pushing the ball up the floor and penetrating to the basket. And, you know, not going to do that now. Like you said, they might use Saric in that role some. But, it's, you know, they were going to build a certain style around his play. That's why they drafted him, and now they don't have that. And, boy, if he misses, you know, beyond the All-Star break, you're talking about pretty much a lost year in development. Anybody have any thoughts they wanted to add to the Sixers on Simmons?
Yeah, I mean, even when he comes back, they would probably be very hesitant, you know, very conservative about his playing time. I mean, say he does come back after the All-Star break, you're probably looking at 10 minutes a night, 12 minutes a night. You know, and you know, it almost like the moral of the story is tanking doesn't pay. You know, it's just really, you know, it's just
you never know.
Yourself. You really bank on one guy. I mean, we saw that with Greg Odom and other guys. I mean, you know, you really need to, you know, need to be a full approach that includes drafting, but, you know, smart free agency and smart trades and everything. And, you know, and they've kind of put everything into just the lottery, and, you know, you bank it all on one guy, and one guy gets hurt, and you're really kind of back to where you started.
Yeah, finally, they draft a guy who's not hurt when they pick him, and he gets hurt right away. Josh, are you chiming in there?
Yeah, I'll just add one more thing. If he does come back, you know, in December or January, that'll give him like a month or two to play with this team before the All-Star break, before the trade deadline. And if for some reason they're not able to trade any of their three centers, we'll see how the Sixers, you know, end up playing with that three-headed monster with Jared Bayless, you know, the new player they got, how they do with this team if they're struggling or if they're successful. We'll see how they do. But Simmons will get to play with the team for a month or two. You know, he might not be 100% coming back from the injury, but I think a lot of teams at the trade deadline will be, you know, especially contenders, will be looking for a center or power forward or something like that. So I think the Sixers, the impact of Simmons coming back could help them in terms of trading one of their centerpieces.
Yeah, but that's a big if. We'll see. And like I said, the Sixers haven't said anything official. So I also, like Gordon made a good point about you always worry with feet with players. And although, you know, I'm not saying this is part of it. I'm not a doctor. But, you know, he has picked up 30 pounds since college. He's gained 30 pounds this year, apparently all muscle or mostly muscle. You know, with feet, not saying it caused it, but, you know, you worry about the extra weight that his body's not used to having on the bones when he does come back. Let's
yeah,
shift gears here, and Josh, I'm going to give you a shot, Josh.
Yeah,
we spoke about Ryan Howard last week at length, but you weren't on the show. Gordon and I talked about it. Today is his last game as a Philly. They're going to do a ceremony for him before the game. I think it's supposed to start 2:30. Your thoughts on Ryan Howard and his legacy, let's say, Josh.
Yeah, I don't know with the weather if I'm going to go, but I was planning. I haven't been to a game at Citizens Bank Park this whole season because, you know, being out in L.A., I did go to a Dodgers-Phillies game and a Padres-Phillies game out in Los Angeles and San Diego. But I was thinking of going to the last game, last chance to see Howard in a Phillies uniform. The ceremony should be a lot of fun, but hopefully they'll televise it if I don't go to the game. Yeah, I think that, you know, he's a guy, I think he has 382 home runs after his home run yesterday. So he's 18 away from 400. He has a chance to possibly, you know, his average is horrible. It's like 195 under the Mendoza line, but he has a chance possibly. He still has, I actually predicted that he would hit 25 home runs this year. He's right at 25 right now. So he has a chance, I think, to hook on with an American League team and be a DH for an American League team, possibly with the Red Sox, with Big Poppy retiring their DH, or maybe the Yankees because they have a short porch in right field. Maybe, you know, some team in the American League he can hook on as a guy that can be a DH or even a pinch hitter or something like that that can still provide some pop. So I think in terms of that, it would be interesting to see if he gets the 400 home runs. 500 home runs has always been the landmark for guys. If you hit 500 home runs, it's almost an automatic bid into the Hall of Fame. So he looked like when he was on that five-year run of, like, averaging 45 home runs or something like that during that five-year Ruthian run, as they called it, that he was going to hit 500 home runs, but he got a little bit of a late start because of Jim Thome being on the Phillies and kind of blocking him. So he got a little bit of a late start to his career. Otherwise, he might have reached 500 home runs, so it's a little bit of a shame. But I don't think he's going to be a Hall of Famer. He will make the Phillies Wall of Fame, I believe, and he is one of the – they showed the stats yesterday. I think he's second or third in – I think second in home runs all-time for the Phillies and third in RBIs all-time for the Phillies. So – or I might have it reversed, one of those stats. So he's one of the best Phillies of all time. He's the only player – or only the second player ever to win Rookie of the Year – his first year and MVP his second year. Can you guys name the other guy who did that by any chance?
Josh, can you repeat that again? The first of what?
Only the second player ever. There was one other player to do it that won Rookie of the Year his first year and won MVP his second year.
Freddie Lynn.
I think the caller jumped in. Say it again.
Rookie of the Year first year, MVP second year. I have no idea, but... Yeah.
I think the caller jumped in with the – were we a caller with the answer?
Yes. Hi, how are you guys? I think it's Freddie Lynn of the Boston Red Sox, 75, 76.
No, it was Cal Ripken Jr.
Even better.
Good
company to be in.
Good guess. Is this Bill?
Yes. Hi, guys.
Hi, Bill. Do you have a comment or question on Ryan Howard or want to say something?
Yeah, on Ryan Howard, I think that – no, I'd love to go back with Ryan Howard because I think we get these generational players that – come along middle of the order guy who's a Hall of Famer or close to it for 5, 7, 9 years. If you get 10, he's got a shot. But we had the privilege to watch the best first baseman in Phillies history, the best second baseman, the best shortstop. And he got hurt and had some injury problems, just stayed around. But his contract being what it was, I think the fans didn't really appreciate him for what he accomplished. And 58 home runs without steroids in that era is pretty impressive. And 140 RBIs on a number of occasions. We were really privileged to have him, and I think we're going to miss him terribly.
Yeah, good points. Just monster numbers he put up. And it's funny, we talked about this last week, and Josh wasn't on, but he's on today. We all think he's just a little short of being a Hall of Famer, both for the length of his run and for and the injury certainly hurt him. But, boy, that five-year stretch, you know, he was as good as there was. And Bill, you're right. Best first baseman, best second baseman, and best shortstop in Phillies history, I think – I won't ever say without a doubt because someone will argue something, but I think I'll say that's an overwhelming majority opinion. We do have another caller on the line, 1789, your last four. I'm sorry?
I was just going to say some might argue Larry Boa at shortstop, but I think Rollins is better.
I love Larry Boa. Believe me, Larry Boa is one of my favorite Phillies ever, and Jimmy Rollins has passed Larry Boa. And like I said, I'm a huge Boa fan. We have a caller, 1789, last four digits. Do you have a question or comment about Ryan Howard?
Yeah, that's me. Oh, I just was on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That was me.
4448.
I'm agreeing with you guys.
I'm sorry.
Not
4448? Okay.
Thank
you. All right. Gordon, anything you wanted to add about Ryan Howard? And then, Bill, great points on Ryan Howard. Thank you.
No, I think
Gordon,
I said everything. I think I said everything I needed that needed to be said last week, and you know, basically just sum it all up. I mean, you look at an organization that's only won two World Series, and you always remember the guys who got you there and who won it for you, and they don't win it without him. So that's pretty much sums it up right there. Without no Ryan Howard, no World Series.
That's for sure, and I like that he's getting this last little. You know, I don't know what they're going to do today. We're doing the show early, so the ceremony's going to be after the show. But I really like the. I hope he gets a home run today. I'd like him to finish as the team leader in home runs. And by the way, his average is at 199. So it'd be nice if he got over the 200 mark. But it would be kind of cool if he led the team in home runs his last year as a Philly. And I agree with Josh. I think some team, American League, I think what he's done the last couple months, two or three months, some team at least should give him a look next year in the American League where he can be a DH. We'll finish up with the Eagles, but let's quickly move on. I'm sorry, I'm not done with the Phillies yet. My bad. While we're still on the Phillies, this year was about learning about the future, learning about next year. So I want to spend a couple minutes here just discussing, and I'll give you guys different areas of the team. But, you know, what did we learn? Are the Phillies, you know, set for the future, or are they – you know, partially set for the future, or do they still have a long way to go? Josh, why don't we start with you, and we'll start with the starting rotation. Did we find out that they have guys there that are going to be part of the future? And by the way, we don't know if they're going to re-sign Jeremy Hellickson. We assume they're going to make him an offer. It will cost them about $17 million. You know, do they have the pieces for the future rotation, or are they still searching here?
I think they're still searching a little bit. The guy pitching today, I think, is certainly a part of it. Jared Eichhoff, I think, has had a pretty good season. Aaron Nola had a great start to the season, then struggled, and then they had to shut him down with the injury. Hopefully he doesn't have to have surgery or anything like that, but I think he's a part of the future. Hopefully they bring Hellickson back because I think he's had a pretty decent year and could be a pretty good third or fourth starter. But I think they still have some guys in the minor leagues that hopefully can come up. I want to talk a little bit about the offense, not guys on the team, but guys at the Reading Phillies who have 89 wins this year.
Hold up. I'll come back to you for that. Let's just stick with the pitching for right now. Okay. So you got the starting.
So the pitching, I think they still have, they need some help there. They have some guys that will be part of the future, but they still need a couple guys to fill the rotation.
Are you sold on Vince Velasquez as being part of the future?
That's a really tough question. I don't know. I mean, I think he had the 17 strikeout game early on in the season, but I think a lot of the points that you've made during the show is he's kind of become a five-inning pitcher. He throws a lot of pitches, and he walks a lot of guys, and I think if I had to pick one way or the other, I think he is part of the future. Hopefully he can work out. You know, he's a very young pitcher. Hopefully he can work out some of that high pitch count and you know, work that out in spring training and with the pitching coaches and stuff like that. So I think he is part of the future, but at the same time, I think he has to improve if he's going to really make his mark as one of the key pieces of the starting rotation.
Okay. Gordon, maybe the most surprising part about this Phillies team this year, and it's been the bullpen. I mean, we had Hector Neris and Jeremer Gomez were just terrific for so long. Both of them have gone south in the past month. Gomez just way off the charts now, bad. Do they have the pieces for the bullpen for the future? Or, like I said, it was way better than we thought it was going to be this year. But, you know, was that kind of an aberration? Or, you know, or do we have the pieces for next year? Or do they have to clean this thing out again?
Well, I think what you saw was just not enough. I mean, they kind of tried to ride two guys that they didn't really know going in what they were going to get as far as they could. But it's a long season. It really, when it comes to successful bullpens, not to dip into the political world, but it takes a village, and you know, you do need to repopulate that village on a regular basis. I certainly would, you know, still keep those two guys, like you said. I mean, that was a lot of work. but bullpens are always a tricky thing on how to build a bullpen. You really don't know from year to year. You're dealing with guys who maybe didn't cut it as starters, or who are sometimes bouncing from team to team. They're journeymen, and sometimes they just kind of come to a place and they pitch well for you for a season, a half a season, and then they go south, and you just have to keep working on it. So, you know, I think really it starts with the bullpen. I mean, it starts with the starting rotation, and maybe they have to identify not only who's in the rotation, but who in that rotation who maybe has a major league arm, but they really don't think could be a major league starter, and start looking at some guys as, you know, long relievers, middle relievers, because really a lot of your relief pitchers were, you know, starters who just couldn't cut it as starters, or who just seemed better, you know, seemed like they'd be better off being relievers, and maybe they could identify a guy or two that they could roll back to the bullpen as, you know, maybe other people come up from the farm system or other people are acquired, and then they could kind of just reshape their bullpen. I certainly wouldn't tear it apart, but I would reshape the bullpen a little bit. I think it's almost a healthy thing to do from year to year. See, take stock on who's out there outside your organization. Look who's in your organization. Look who's not going to make your rotation. Look who long term isn't going to be a real part of your starting rotation, and you know, form your bullpen from there.
Yeah, you know, I looked it up as you're speaking. Neris made 78 appearances this year, and Gomez made 70. And, you know, you just have to hope that what happened is they got worn out and tired, and they're going to return to, you know, similar level that they were at for most of the year next year. But, yeah, you know, one of the guys you mentioned, starter, since I asked Josh about it, just a name that was floated. I've seen it's floated out there once or twice, that maybe Velasquez, that's his future. As hard as he throws, maybe he's the guy.
I could definitely see it. He would have to, you know, obviously you want a guy who could work an inning faster than he could, but I could see it. If he could harness what he has, you know, I could definitely see it even as a closer at some point. He would have to wrap himself around it mentally as much as physically, but I could definitely see it.
Okay. Hey, Josh. Yeah, Josh, now we're ready for your next point. First base,
yeah.
Ryan Howard's going to be gone. You do have Tommy Joseph, who hit a bunch of home runs this year since being called up, at actually a pretty amazing rate per at bat, although he hits a lot of solo homers, but you know, can't deny that. But are you convinced they're set there, or do you have some guys in the minors you started to talk about who you think would be maybe pushing him out as well?
Yeah, you led me right to my point. I think Tommy Joseph, it's possibly he could be the answer. I mean, he hit 20-plus home runs in limited time, very impressive. He's one of those four infielders we talked about with 20-plus home runs. But they have this guy, Rice Hoskins, in the minor leagues, a first baseman, 38 home runs and 116 RBIs. Pretty impressive numbers. And I think that, you know, at the very least, one of those guys could be trade bait. But I think Rice Hoskins is probably going to be start the year in AAA next year and see what he can do at Lehigh Valley before they bring him up. And then possibly, you know, start Tommy Joseph as their starter next year. And maybe, you know, they bring Rice Hoskins up in June 1st so they keep his service time. You know, if you bring a player up after June 1st, you keep that service time and an extra year of service. So I think that it's a pleasant problem to have. Tommy Joseph was their big catching prospect, but he had some injuries, some concussions and different injuries. So he's now first baseman, but I think it's a nice problem to have two first basemen that could fill the void after Ryan Howard leads the team.
Thank you. Gordon, another guy hit a lot of home runs this year, also hit the 20 mark, and that's Freddy Galvis. On the other hand, and we should add, I mean, he's a gold glove shortstop. He's a terrific fielder. On the other hand, he's hitting .242, and his on-base percentage is just a putrid .275. You have J.P. Crawford pushing, you know, maybe he's the shortstop. Is Galvis part of this future? Maybe at second base pushing out Cesar Hernandez? Or is Galvis just a guy you keep here until and he becomes a utility player behind Crawford?
Yeah, I think the real long-term question is who's your utility guy? Is it Cesar Hernandez or is it Galvis? But, you know, I wouldn't be so quick to move him out. I mean, I guess as I get older, I tend to be more conservative, you know, with just getting rid of guys. You know, you don't find shortstops who field like he does and have the power that he has, you know, every day. I mean, you might find a guy with the same on-base percentage and same average who had, you know, four home runs and doesn't field as well. And teams aren't as, you know, they just figure, well, he's okay. So, I mean, so, you know, sometimes we can get, you know, I know everybody's a little impatient for J.P. Crawford, but Crawford did not have the kind of year some people expected at AAA. You know, he's still considered the top prospect. He has a lot of athletic ability, and but you know, I guess they'll have to take a look at I guess he'll play winter ball and take a look at how he looks in spring training and really make it an open competition. And really, it's not just Galvis head on with Crawford. You have to really factor Hernandez in there as well, because you certainly have that option at second base by moving Galvis there. And then maybe Hernandez, who has played some outfield before, as we recall, a couple of years ago, finished the year up in center field, could be a guy who kind of bounces around a little bit as a utility guy, not just in the infield but also in the outfield. So, I think there's some options there. I wouldn't hurry to trade a guy unless you really got a big return on him. I think he is, a major league shortstop, and they don't, every team wants to have a quality starting shortstop. So if you found the right trade partner, I wouldn't be opposed to it, but I certainly wouldn't be in a hurry to do it either.
I just want, we have one that's just caller 4448. Do you have a question or comment? Okay. Josh, let's transition to outfield. We'll do it really quickly. Franco, we'll just say he's going to be the third baseman, although certainly he needs to be more consistent. In the outfield, Dubel Herrera, we saw some really good stuff from him. Maybe the All-Star team, we also saw some bad stuff from him. Cody Ashe, I don't know if Peter Boris is going to be back. Aaron Altair came up with a lot of hoopla. I combined the two words. Hypla, it's a new word with a lot of hypla. ends up being batting 199. Roman Quinn's been hurt. Nick Johnson, did I get his last name right? Nick Williams, I'm sorry.
Well, Nick Williams.
Having some maturity issues certainly down there, and didn't exactly light the world on fire, didn't even get called up on September 1st. Josh, are we good on the outfield pieces, or do we need
definitely
more someplace else? Maybe, like you said, another guy from another team somewhere.
So definitely not. And once again, you're a good host, Eric. You led me right into my next point I wanted to make. There's a guy at Double A Reading. Also, Altair, I agree. He was good last year, and then he got hurt and hasn't been so great this year. The expectations were that he was going to be fill that role in the outfield, but he hasn't been so great. There's a guy named Dylan Cousins, right fielder for Double A Reading, played 134 games, 40 home runs, led the team. He had 125 RBIs, and he batted .276. So I know it's Double A, but very impressive numbers. He'll probably start the year in Triple A again. You never know. Sometimes guys get promoted from Double A right to the majors. Kyle Kendrick was a guy who got promoted right from Double A to the majors. So you never know. It can happen. But, we'll see. He's definitely going to, I'm sure, get a call to make it to spring training, and they'll see how he does. But I think that there's a bright future for Dylan Cousins. I think that he's going to be a future starter for this team. The outfield for the Phillies, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think they've been putrid. I think their averages and their home runs are, if not last, close to last in all of baseball. So they really need some help in the outfield. They may need to make a trade or get a free agent somewhere, but I think that Cousins is a guy that could possibly start the year for the Phillies next year, and if not start the year, he'll be in AAA and come up, I think, June 1st also.
Possibly, yeah. And Pete McCann made some noise about getting, a major league bat was his word in the lineup, and wherever that comes from, but we'll see. Gordon, I want to shift gears here, and if you can give this to me in less than a minute, though, because we're going to be up against the end of the regular shift before we get to archive. What have you seen? Give me a player or two you've seen in the Flyers preseason that you've been impressed with.
Well, I know Travis Sanheim played pretty well in the first preseason game. He had 2 assists, and that's a defenseman. You know, we were talking more about Provorov, but Sanheim is a year older than Provorov, and maybe he's you can't go too much by one preseason game, but maybe he's a step or half a step ahead right now. We don't see him every day in practice or anything, and then Konechny is really being given a shot. I know they're experimenting on a line with Couturier and Voracek, and so you're talking about second line right there. Pretty much filling Gagne's spot on the second line. I don't necessarily agree with that. I have my own feelings on Couturier, and I think he should be more of a third line guy, playing with like Reed, Roffel, those kind of players. But I don't get a vote on this. So, it seems like they're really giving him a shot at least to play up there, be a top six forward. Unless it's just to get a snapshot for the future, it's hard to tell. But those are two guys, I guess, jump right to mind.
Those are good, and I've been really impressed with Sanheim. Provorov, I almost expected it from, but Sanheim really impressed. Philip Myers has played well, and Konechny. In fact, last night, Sanheim, Konechny, Provorov, and Ellen Gossespierre, I think I'm missing somebody, all had assists there last night, which was kind of neat to see. All right, that's bringing us up close to here at the end of our regular program. Please check out PhillyFanatics.com. I will have a story on the Phillies, looking at what we learned about them this year. Thank you for listening. Check out PhillyFanatics.com, and we will talk Eagles after the break here. There we are. Okay, now we're up to the Eagles. 3-0, I don't think anybody here had them 3-0. I think most people at least had the Pittsburgh loss, so most people had them at this point 2-1 or 1-2, but more than record. Josh, what have they done? Give me we don't have a ton of time here in archives, so just pick one or two things, and Gordon will do the same with you. What's gotten them to 3-0? How have they done this? Pick one or two things.
I'll go with two things. Obviously, Carson Wentz, the play of him, has just been unbelievable as a rookie. The things he's been able to do has just been unreal. He's got great coaching, a bunch of former quarterbacks as his coaches. So I think that, and then also kind of a combination of two things. I'm going to bunch it into one thing, but it's two things. It's time of possession, which they certainly didn't win under Chip Kelly. They've been winning the time of possession battle, and that in turn gives their defense more time to rest on the sideline and be fresh. And going to this 4-3, I think has really helped this defense. Fletcher Cox has been unbelievable. And I think that those two things, Carson Wentz, the play of him, and their defense overall, Malcolm Jenkins has been really good. So their defense overall has been really impressive. I believe they're allowing only 9 points per game in their three games. So very impressive.
Yep, the two good choices. Gordon, how about you? Aside from Wentz and the defense, and Josh mentioned the time of possession helping the defense as well. What are two things that have gotten this team to where it is?
Well, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, Josh kind of hit on the main points. What's gotten them there is, a lot of times in life and in sports, you can just break it down to where you're lucky or where you're not lucky. And they were pretty lucky that they got two beatable teams to start the season, because that when you have a first-year coach and a rookie quarterback and to come out and have two winnable games, I mean, nothing's guaranteed, etched in stone, especially in the NFL. The old any given Sunday adage, and especially early in the season, anything could happen. But they had two beatable teams. And they beat two beatable teams to start the season, Chicago and Cleveland, in different order, Cleveland and Chicago. And then, that had them coming in 2-0, and they were where we expected. I expected 2-1 going into the break, so 3-0 would have been a bonus, and they were able to just have the game of their lives right there against Pittsburgh. And, so I think the schedule is a big part of it, and being prepared for that schedule and being prepared at a shoot. I think coaching is a big part of it. Doug Peterson, Frank Reich, and Jim Schwartz, I mean, all deserve kudos, and they deserve kudos, and it makes me more angry at Chip Kelly than ever, because it's some new players, especially on defense. Some of the defensive backs are new, but really it's a lot of the same guys. But all players really ask of a coach is that you use them to the fullest ability and set them up to succeed, not set them up to fail, and particularly on the defensive side of the ball, and even on the offensive side of the ball, looking at some guys. I don't know if that was really done under Chip Kelly. He had to be the big Mahaffey. He had to be the emperor, and I don't think that left much, I think he kind of looked at more as like a college team. And you look at a guy like Brandon Graham, and you look at some other guys have really excelled being set up to succeed instead of set up to fail. And a lot of that, like Josh said, is the time of possession, and the defense can make adjustments, attack, come out fresh. And a guy like Trey Burton he used to have great preseasons and then would never be used on offense. And once the season started by Chip Kelly, I mean, he's a small piece, but he's a piece that this coaching staff recognized. Doug Peterson said almost from day one when he looked at film, I guess preseasons or whatever, that he's a guy we need to get more involved. And Zach Ertz gets injured, and Trey Burton gets more involved. So that's pretty much coaching. I mean, there's a lot of things, but he said they've really the schedule, the coaching, and obviously the defense.
Okay, Gordon, quick question. Give me a short answer here, based on your Chip Kelly comments. I have to ask you this. Today it's Cowboys at 49ers. Who are you rooting for?
Well, you always have to root against you always have to root against your division rivals for practical reasons. You know, it's not business; it's not personal; it's business. Going back to the Godfather, so I guess I have to just I can't have the game on. I can't cheer for the Cowboys while it's going on, but I would like to look up the score and see the 49ers winning the game. I don't think they will, but I'd like to see the 49ers win the game just for the sake of, you know, I think it really might come down to the Eagles and the Cowboys. So. Start looking that way right now. So I guess I would have to look for a loss.
Checking. I was just checking.
Yeah.
I was just
yeah.
checking on the Cowboys versus the Cowboys. So now what I want to do is just give me your record that you predicted at the beginning of the year and your record now going forward, what you think they'll be. You know, and quickly just give me a quick reason why you've changed, aside from Carson Wentz, which is a big one, but maybe that is your answer. So, Josh, your record you predicted before the season – and your record you're now adjusting to now, and why?
All right, so this is actually the Voice of the Fanatics question. If you go on the PhillyFanatics.com website, and I actually already responded on the website. I had them at 6-10 before the season because rookie quarterback, lots of reasons. Now I think they're going to go 11-5, actually. So I have them with five more wins. Quick shout-out to my nephew, Max. He thinks they're going to go 13-3. So he really is a big Eagles fan. He's 6 years old, and he thinks they're going to go 13-3. But reason why is I just think they have great reasons we said already, great coaching, great defense, and Carson Wentz has just been unbelievable. He might hit a wall. He might have some bad games here and there. But I just, you know, I looked at the schedule, and I kind of went through it, and I think that they're going to go 11-5.
All right, Gordon?
I don't remember if I went with 7-9 or 8-8.
I think 7-9.
Okay. Well, it's they're one game ahead. Basically, you break it down. They're one game ahead of where I had them. I had them at 2-1 at this point, and they're 3-0. So I guess I don't mean to be a spoil sport, but I'll have to go with 8-8.
Oh, okay. So just the one game. You know, I had them at. I was the pessimist. I had them at 5-11. Carson Wentz obviously is much better than I thought he was. I also give credit to the coaching staff. You know, I wasn't sure. Doug Peterson was a big unknown. I've been really impressed. The defense is also is much better than I thought it was. I knew it was going to be better. I didn't know how much better. On the other hand, though, I look at the schedule, and I go, you know, four of their next five games coming out of the break, I think they'll beat the Lions, but we do have 4 out of 5 on the road, including all three, and all three of those road games are divisional games, Redskins, Cowboys, Giants. And then I look at even, like, the next 9 games, and they only have 3 home games in their next 9, and the opponents are the Vikings, Falcons, and Packers. Falcons are obviously the easiest of those 3. You never know what's going to happen, but certainly the Vikings and Packers are challenged no matter where you're playing them. So I'm going to bump it up, but I'm only going, Gordon, with you. I'm at 8-8, possibly 9-7, but I'm going 8-8, and maybe I'm being too cautious, but that's the way I feel. All right, it's time for final thoughts. Josh, your final thought.
All right, I'm going to go back to the Reading Phillies. I kind of am obsessed with them because they have 89 wins, and they've just been unbelievable this year. The Eastern League nominee for the Larry McPhail Award, which is given to a club in minor league baseball that has demonstrated outstanding and creative marketing and promotional efforts, is the Reading Fightin' Phils. The 2016 season is Reading was the year of long celebration of their 50th anniversary of their affiliation with the Phillies, becoming one of only 3 teams in history of minor league baseball to reach the 50-season mark so with their affiliates. So just an unbelievable feat to stay in Reading all these years, and to get that award is a big honor. And, you know, the playoffs are coming up. Hopefully they can win the Eastern League Championship. So that should be exciting to watch. And a lot of young players on that team, a lot of players that can be future Phillies. And it reminds me, you know, I don't know if it will be quite this good, but it reminds me of way back when Chase Utley and Ryan Howard and Jimmy Rollins and Cole Hamels, for that matter, too, 4 guys that were with the Reading Phillies that made their mark and came up through the system and really made their mark with the Phillies and helped them win a World Series. Hopefully something like that can happen again with a couple with the outfielder I mentioned and the first baseman. And they got a couple, you know, they got J.P. Crawford, who played a little bit in AA and AAA this year. And they also have some pitching prospects that – could be good in AA and AAA as well. So go Reading Phillies, and hopefully the future is bright for the Phillies in the next year or two.
Okay, thank you, Josh. Should point out that first of all, Philly should hire you for public relations. That's a tremendous job right there. but Also, along with the players you've mentioned who are probably going to move up to the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs in AAA next year, going with them is the manager, Dusty Watson, who was the manager of Reading, winningest manager in Reading history. The Phillies have cut ties with Dave Brundage, who was the Lehigh Valley manager. And so we'll see. If you liked Reading this year, you'll probably really enjoy Lehigh Valley next year. Gordon, your final thought?
Yeah, I'm going to stay also a little bit in the minor league system here, with a little different spin. Although I would like to point out that the GM in Reading, and a lot of that marketing is really on him, is Scott Hunsicker. He's from Conshohocken, and I covered him when he played quarterback for Plymouth White Marsh High School, and he also played baseball and then played baseball at what's the college there? Albright, and then I think he started interning with the Reading Phillies, and that was his ascension from there to where he is now. And it really is just, from a marketing standpoint, just with not just one mascot, but three or four mascots running through the stands and the fireworks and everything. Just a great experience. And when they have some really exciting prospects, last year I went to a couple of games, and I think it was said that they had as many as 8 future major leaguers on the team. Some of those guys moved on, but that is still pretty impressive. Staying with the system, you know, last week we talked about Ryan Howard, and we talked about his career and, you know, how many home runs he has, and we talked about how he was kind of held back a little bit because he had to kind of stay down a little on the farm a little longer because Jim Thome was with the Phillies. And, you know, it was discussed earlier that maybe the Phillies should go out and get an outfield bat, you know, a quote-unquote major league bat. But, you know, you don't want to get yourself in the same situation. I know a little frustrated that, you know, Quinn got hurt and Althea didn't really come off his injury the way we expected. But, you know, you do need to keep in mind that if you really believe in some of these guys, you can't really block up too many spots. If they only had one outfielder coming through, I would be a little bit more for it. But I'm looking at something right here. It has the Phillies' top, like, 30 prospects. But out of the top 7, 5 of them are outfielders. Now, a couple of them are Moniak and a guy named Cornelius Randolph who played, you know, a lower level. So, you have to keep that in mind. You can't really wait. You can't really bank what you do next year on 4 or 5 years from now. But, you know, Cousins, Quinn, Nick Williams, some of these guys are knocking on the door, and you only need really one of them to really, you know, blossom. I wouldn't be surprised if they try Ashley at first base as a guy to platoon with Tommy Joseph next year, at least to see if he can do it and then go from there. But, you know, I wouldn't be so quick to, you know, clog up big contracts with veterans, the outfield, on what is still a building situation when you have, you know, some really exciting outfielders coming through the system.
All right. And a future. And I thought you were going to go to the Flyers, but with the young guys coming up, but we could apply that for another day. For NFL fans, although I guess the Phillies has archived, the game's already over, but just for Gordon and Josh and I, thriller going one over in London, Jaguars up 30-27 right now. 1:49 left, and the Colts have the ball. For my final thought, I'm going to shift out. We've done a lot of stuff today, Eagles, Flyers, Sixers, and extensive Phillies. The world of golf, and this happened last Sunday after we were done our show, lost Arnold Palmer, and I should say not the world of golf, the world of sports, and really one of the terrific golfers of all time. Not the best, but certainly up there. Maybe he's the guy, though, who really, it was before my time, but everything I've read is the guy who really got the enthusiasm for golf. It brought more people out to the game, got more people playing the game, just a regular guy and who had an amazing charisma and charm. And I've had the, opportunity to see him in person, when covering golf events. Just a remarkable guy and comes off as everybody's friend. And what I would say about him is that, you know, like I said, I was too young to see him play when he was at his best, but even when he was a senior golfer, the charisma and charm, grace, and class that he carried with him was really just exemplary. And like I said, I'd like to, you know, I guess my final word on Arnold Palmer is he conducted himself the way you would want to see every athlete conduct themselves, just in terms of dealing with the public, dealing with media, dealing with everybody, with fellow competitors, just a class guy, and his loss will be felt throughout the sports world. That's it for this week's show. Great show. Like I said, we covered a ton of ground. Gordon, Josh, great job. We will be back at our normal time next week, 6:30, as we follow up the Eagles-Lions game. Please check out PhillyFanatics.com. Lots of great stuff there. for Gordon Glanzheim and Josh Lansbury. Thank you, Bill, for a good call as well. I am Eric Fisher. Have a great week, everybody.